your place. Even though it is an illusion, it affects every other manifest object on your place. And regardless of what your reality may be, you are experiencing in this dimension. And this is what we've tried to get across. You are an etheric light being, but you are in manifest sensing form. And if that is where you are, that is the experience you will have. All of you live in two dimensions, at least. That which is astral, outside yourself, when your soul or astral center travels. And babies tend to be gone most of the time. They don't like it. And all the while that their little bodies are resting in sleep, they are busy. They know. And basically what they have to put up with are parents dumbing them down. And it's getting harder and harder to accomplish that as these little beings know their purpose. When they hit the ground, they hit it running. And the greatest gift you can give them is to allow them just to keep trucking. And they're going to test you absolutely to your very limits. But to get a turnaround, it's going to need to be that way. So we could just assume that the teachings of Russell and Ashley and a few other ones are absolutely correct. You come from light. Light is. Light is the central sun. Aton is the label for that central sun. I am a fragment of that central sun. And when one's object to that, I apologize. I'm sorry that you cannot see it. It doesn't make me so damn special. It only makes me different. And it carries a lot of responsibility. But it doesn't carry any more responsibility at my level than yours does at your level. And that's what's important for you to understand. You are not expected to be Lord of the universe. You don't have to go create another solar system. But you better learn to create what is necessary in your own little orbiting world. And get this one turned around enough so that you can continue your growing process so that someday you can sit in the central creator's slot and create a universe. And those are mammoth perceptions. Absolutely mammoth-sized perceptions. But when you've got it, boy, do you have it. And you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to change your dimension. You don't have to float. All you have to do is know. So let's have some more, Nora. Frankly, I liked his tales of getting there better than I did after he got there. And the things that he cannot share and will not share because they are so advanced and there is a commitment not to show off. Those are the things that are worthy of the talking about. But he got sent to this place. He wants to share. He knows what his job is. He's going to get it done. And that will be very helpful for all of you eventually. And you may not hear another word from him until it's practically done.
Since you mentioned the astral, second, another dimension in the astral, especially children kind of floating off to it, I thought I'd bring in this comment of Terry's at this time. A question was asked, how do the masters heal? the psychic surgery. And Terry said the patient is laid on a table, and I believe they were in trance, but I'm not sure if that's what he said. The astral body is raised up above the level of the physical body, and the master's hands are magnetic to that astral body, and they kind of coax the disease out with their hands. I was watching his fingers as he was doing it, coaxing the disease out of the astral body and then pulling it out and discarding it. Then the astral body is put back in the physical form and the person is healed. Now sometimes they don't realize they're healed immediately because there are some adjustments the body has to make, but the disease is gone. And there were some other questions about healing, and one of them was a woman that he had helped to be healed using colors. And I asked him about if he could explain the colors more, and he said he wasn't able to tell me that. So there are a number of ways that they use different techniques for different people, I guess, but some are diet, some color, some sound, some exercise, and a great deal of thought. Like he himself said, he had healed his own broken pelvic by thinking about welding it together, you know, this big crack in his bone, mentally seeing it being welded together, and it was healed in 30 days. I've heard or read other information about psychic surgery, and some of them don't say it's the astral body that's raised, it's rather the etheric body, and it's done through perhaps a master surgeon on the other side working through a medium, a trance medium on this side who performs the work for the master on the other side. But Terry's was very similar to that. Another question was, or he asked us, and all of us flunked a test, why is the sun a yellow color when the central sun is a clear crystal color? Does anyone have an idea who didn't ride with Terry?
That's the way it is.
Well, he said it is pollution. It is pollution that causes the sun to be a golden color.
That's what we send back to the sun.
Yeah.
Because there's rays going both directions.
Yeah.
And what we send the sun is very polluting.
That's true. He gave us a version of the five ages of man. I'm not sure I can get it all on here. And he likens the first stage to dry ice. Do you remember what he said about the dry ice, Charles?
Sorry.
But this is obviously a very solid state and somewhat volatile, I would think. But anyway, the next one is regular ice. And the next one, melting ice. Where most men are today, he said, or a lot of them. The next one is water, the age of Aquarius. I-O-U-S. And the last one is vapor, etheric. And he said, when we get into the age of Aquarius, men will learn how to meditate and create the heat and below their, or at their solar plexus area, that will help them develop the etheric, which is the vapor or symbolic of it. When the heat of meditation is applied, the etheric is developed. So. Did you have any comments on that?
Are you asking me?
Oh, would you like to comment?
No? Okay. Who are you talking to?
I was talking to Brent. I'm sorry. He was on the trip, and I thought he might remember something.
I think all of you were on a trip.
It was really a great day.
It was a great day.
But as you say, there is a great deal to learn, and it's not possible to remember everything. In fact, I was thinking, things come to me vaguely, and I try to pin them down and put it on paper, and it's just not there anymore, you know.
Son of a gun.
Yeah. Oh,
isn't that the way it works every morning?
Yep, when we come back. I remembered that I remembered something once, though.
Terry laid a great deal of emphasis on his man's need to take control of his body, to feed it the right food, to meditate correctly, and to be able to become an immortal, I guess, through his meditation. He says, the reason the immortals are immortal is because they eat God. They breathe in the cosmic dust. And they come to a place where they don't need food. And the problem with man is that the food he eats takes so much energy that it depletes his basic store of energy. He comes in a balanced condition and he has a certain store of energy, but he uses the energy up and he doesn't replace it correctly. He's not eating the cosmic dust, but also the food he eats doesn't restore his energy. So he's using up, say, 15% and restoring 10%, so he's got a deficit here. And then as he goes along in age, he gets more and more deficit until finally there's no store of energy to draw on, and all of his energy is gone, and he dies. And that's typical of most men today. But the immortals start with a balance of energy, and they use the energy, but they replace it. So they replace the energy and increase it so that they eventually become immortals. They never die. They increase their energy to the etheric level through meditation, breathing in the cosmic dust. As the time
once said, working its way up to having cosmic dust capsules.
No, it's all around us. There's no need to put it in caps.
Right. Just let us know when you've perfected it, Princeton.
Okay.
It's not the cosmic dust that's the problem. It's the rest of the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably why they're in the Himalayas, you know? He said something. Terry said something here during the sessions about the location of the immortals in the Himalayas and his trip there and so on. And he described the location as a huge ice cave. And he said that they don't require heat in that cave because of the light that the immortals generate or can call about them. And the light keeps them warm, and they can be in their shirt sleeves in this ice cave, and everyone else in fur coats and everything. But it's because of the light that they can make use of. So one of the questions I had for Terry was, what is that location like? Is it just a big ice cave, you know? And he says, no, it is a really huge installation. And it's a repository of records that go back to our beginnings at Neptune. And the records are all put on a certain material that, of course, lasts a long time, if not forever. And in the language of the time that they were written. And the immortals can interpret that language and read those records. It is really an actual place, but it is the Akashic Records. And we were asked, well, how come they've never been discovered, or what, you know, wouldn't the government want to find out about them and so on? And he said, well, they use some mind control to kind of keep people away. People maybe go look for their place, but somehow or other they never quite find it.
And like the crystal.
Yeah. He said that when the earth changes come, that location will still be there. The Himalayas will still be there, and the records will still be there. They will not be damaged in the earth changes. I think my final drawing here is kind of the darkest one. Terry said, when the time comes for the earth to be cleansed, that we will see this huge purple mist, a line of it in the sky, and gaining in size and depth. And he said it's a negatively charged cloud, a purple color. And it's all the negativity of the earth that finally kind of gathers into this cloud, and it will come from the west, and it will precipitate the tornadoes and all, and have winds 200 to 250 miles an hour, and cover the space between LA and San Francisco inland 900 miles, and everything will be devastated as a result of that. Cleansing is what he calls it. But he said, remember to look for this line of purple clouds. It'll be all across the sky, almost like a purple mist, but it's a negatively charged atmosphere that has just come to the point where it's going to discharge its energy. And we'll have the tornadoes and the 250 mile an hour winds. But he said that happened on Mu, and I believe on Atlantis. He seemed to know quite a bit about Mu, spoke of different things happening on Mu before it disappeared beneath the ocean. There was a man, I think, called Ramu. Was it Ramu?
Ramu.
Ramu, that warned the people about the imminent sinking of their land, and the people wouldn't listen. And he said it will happen in the twinkling of an eye, and the earth will go down. It kind of came up again briefly and then went down and stayed down. But he said it was just like that. It was so quick. But this purple cloud, this long purple cloud over the sky, he said you'll be able to see it all over the sky, and that is the indication that the time has come. Well, thank you. I wish you all could have been with Terry on the trip. I'm sure we'll be all asking him lots more questions next time he comes. He may avoid us next time, really.
Well, we're going to talk about him for a minute. Do you want me to exchange talking machines? I'm going to get pretty personal. You heard Norio talking about this being the place, the energy that emanates from this place. There are many places. In fact, any place can be representative. There are some things manifest in one place or another as far as location that may make a difference. There are pre
determined places which will form the hub of other activities. When the students are ready, the teacher will come. A lot of what happens in your journey is the determination of when you are ready to take on a greater responsibility, get off the ship, play it again, Charlie, or whatever, Sam. Move on, move over, move off. And each time that you come upon the beginning of a new cycle, be it a new year, a new era, a new level of understanding, there has to be a balancing period of time. Brent wants the fleet to arrive. Now go read Sipapu, and you'll see that when that fleet arrives, there's very likely to be a lot of darkness arriving with it. So we have our own little built-in scenario of how we want it to be, but we're not daring enough to change the entire scenario. And you have no right to change someone else's book. If you're going to go by Sipapu Odyssey, then you're going to be stuck with having to listen to our version of Sipapu Odyssey. But certainly your own odyssey can be different. I don't want to be in the dark, so I will get some fuel and I won't have to depend upon an electric producing apparatus. And that'll get me through 3 days or 2 days or a week or 2 months, depending on my preparation and the circumstances around me. And it doesn't take an immortal to get its picture. So don't go thinking that you have immortals up there on who are the last word of God manifest on the top of a mountain in Tibet. God's going to be probably manifest right next to you somewhere. Because where does he dwell? He dwells within you. He's not parked up in the Himalayas somewhere. You need the help where you are. God will send you what you need when you make the call. And most of the time, you will not understand it or recognize it. Dorma says to me, "Sir, Brent's going to have a fit if nothing happens, you know." No, dear, you are going to have a fit if nothing happens. Let's put it where it's at. And you are going to be in court anyway, aren't you? Well, probably so no big deal. Now circumstances change. Always circumstances change. According to whatever is going on in this chaotic energy world. So you have an opportunity to experience and come home for a little reunion. Well, it doesn't look like any big deal is going to happen. And I told her, you will have the surprise you need. Because you're reaching out now, and as you are linking hands across the oceans, literally, in the most earthly way possible, you reach out and make your connections that never made sense before. And through those contacts, you are able to create the next step of what must be. "Well, I'm tired. I'm really tired," she said. "All of you are tired. You work all night, you work all day, and it's just a bombardment of one problem, one thing to be solved, piled upon the other, and then massive things happening. a million questions every day. And the heart cries out and says, I cannot stand any more of it. I need to see more. Then look. I need something I can touch. I need a ship on my mountain. I need something, Father. I'm getting really, really tired. You'll have what you need. I didn't send. Listen to me. I didn't send an Eskimo. I didn't send a Mongolian. I sent a Greek. Why would I do that? Because one of the most interesting periods of expression in several of your lives that are very attached was with Theophilus, an old Athenian, where if you had roots at all, those were the places that you had them, following Mu and Atlantis and on through your experiences. We must work with Greece. Greece is the homeland of us. This is the first place where your Pleiadians came. And you're from that lineage. I'm not going to diagram it in the form of buffaloes. That's where you relate one to another. That it has absolutely zip to do with your color or your race. You have evolved into whatever you are presenting as. And I said, get down there. She needs the reassurance. And what most of you will not know is that in her brief experiences in Greece in your day, very brief. Terry would tell his story, and we were in Salonika, and we were, and Macedonia, and blah, 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 Thessaloniki. I know where that is. Why, you know, NATO's up there. Oh, you know that place. Oh, well, over then there was this tale to be told about Thassos and a tale to be told about Kavala. I know that place. I was there, and the one I was with, his uncle was mayor of Kavala. Oh, really? Thassos, beautiful island. Yes, little bitty thing. And she said, yes. And I could have bought that island when I was there, and it was worth 30 cents an acre. And now they discovered oil. It's worth, you can't touch it. Oh, you know that place. So then he changes and he goes off to some king waiting for his son to come home. And he dives off into the sea. That's Point Sunyan. Oh, you know that place. So pretty soon you think you've got two Greeks over here from yesterday. I sent him to give her message. He told you he was sent. Does he have the capability of the immortals? He is one of them. I need... I didn't need somebody to come and give you a history lesson on the universe. I needed somebody on two legs to come in here and give you the spiritual fuel you need to keep going. And if Dorma is going to speak as my translator, I need her to absolutely know that I know what I'm doing. And I will never deceive her nor you. And when you can relate personally to something, to someone who doesn't know the circumstances, you say, oh my God, what is this? What is this? So Terry was Theophilus. And it's like meeting yourself. And in this expression, there was no more fun to be had. This being never had more fun, and he said it. When he left, he said, I have never in all of my years, and I spent 7 years with the immortals in the Himalayas, have I enjoyed 3 days as much as I have loved this. That is the greatest compliment that you people will ever hear from any mortal being. Now, I don't know how many of you paid attention when he spoke, but the ones who held his hand can tell you he was stone cold. Notably chill in his physical body. All the while, he's passionately telling you all this stuff. He might as well have been a robot. So he is having his experience here in the human form, knowing he's got a purpose, knowing he must hold your hands. He said he was sent. I sent him. And he finally said, yes, you know. To take the next step. I know what to do, my dear. You can leave part of it in my hands, on my shoulders. I know what to do. And I know what to do on the other end to make sure that it works. Those are the things I want you to get. Not this perception of what God is. You know what God is. Because you're His breath. He has breathed you out. And now He's breathing you in. And it is a wonderful time. It is a wonderful time. And it's important, you see, that we do not distress and despair and fall away. Ones who are going to fall away need to move away. That's their choice, not our need, do you see? Oh, we've got to get rid of that one and that one and that one because that one did this. And oh, I perceive that I know more than that one. Why am I not running this office or that office or something else? Because it's not your business, that's what. And until you can grow large enough to get over these kinds of interchanges, you're not going to make it much higher anyway. Does that mean that everybody's program's got to stop while you catch up from kindergarten and stop picking your nose and rubbing it on somebody else as if, you know? You're going to have to stop thinking you're so damn much smarter, cuter, prettier, my skin color's better than your skin color. How do you know that would make you better? Maybe the one you just put down is a favored color. Ah, all you white people say, oh, well, I am the compilation of perfection of all the light rays, all the color rays. I am nearly white. Get the word nearly. You aren't white. And that's what God means. You're just another color. which most of the time in your idiocy is red because you're so embarrassed to find you're not perfect. We are. And we are the perfection of whatever God presented. And some people, and I like to express it this way because of my level of appreciation for the ability of having a problem presented over which we can overcome and do it with integrity, honesty, truth, and wisdom. It's all right for Satan to be cunning and shrewd. What makes you think it's not all right with God for you to be cunning and shrewd? We had one leave because I cannot adjust to having a corporation that shelters. Why? I don't know. It just doesn't seem right. Why? Have you read the laws? No, it just doesn't seem right. You haven't studied the laws. You don't know what you're saying. You want everything in perfection, but you're not willing to even try to utilize what is. That's where you are at, you know. When you get over that hurdle, where you will go out there and create what you need, you're going to make it, aren't you? And maybe it is enough that Dorma's the only one that can do it. But guess what? She's the one that's going to get the brunt of everything in the court. Wouldn't it be better if everybody thought she was the one, and while they're badgering her, the rest of you got it done? Wouldn't that be nice? Shelter me, Father. No. No, thank you. I will tell you how, and you will build your shelter. Nothing can touch you. And if Terry didn't tell you anything else that you heard, then if you are standing in the light, there is nothing they can do to you. Well, but I thought you said she had already been killed like 5 times. I did. And guess what? They didn't do a thing to her, did they? Not a thing. And when you realize the difference, what you fear is the unknown and the pain. But it may hurt when I die. You know what? It won't hurt when you die. It only hurts while you're still alive. Dr. Kevorkian figured that out. So death becomes a suicide at whatever age, under whatever circumstances. And there are some things that make that progression maybe easier. But if you're going to hang up on it, you might say, well, you know, up in Tibet, they sit there and they hold their hands out like this. Or with Terry, for hours upon end, they train you to so focus on something else that you can sit in a semi-squatting position indefinitely. Well, we learned that Dorma could sit, when we first began to talk, in total stillness for 3 or 4 hours. Well, we had to give that up. I had to learn that she can't function well unless I occasionally trigger something that makes her move. Because she would come to the end of our session, try to get up and fall down. Your muscles will not tolerate it. Now, let's look at what they may eat on the top of the highest peak in the Himalayas. What can you grow up there? So you better learn to live on snow. It is a place of ingress and egress for masters to do some of their teaching, some of their experiencing, and most of all, their learning. It doesn't have to be the Himalayas. It can be on the point of that thing on Mars that looks like a face. Oh, but what does it mean? What difference does it mean? What difference does it make to you today as to whether there are viruses on Mars? Except that you can know they've lied to you. Because Mars wouldn't come along and fling off a little rock that hits Earth. And now we suddenly look at it, oh, Mars! And it has signs of life! What fool thought that up? That isn't the way the universe works. So, if it was from Mars, how did they prove it? They've lied to you about something else then, haven't they? And then let us always look at the overall meaning of this. You can look at Mars and know there was once life there. Mars ended up being one of the most warring planets in any solar system. Rick comes from there, for goodness sakes. You're a species birthed out of war. And always you will be given what is necessary for your growth, for your experience. And an awful lot of the beings that were birthed or have been birthed on Earth planet are souls re-entering to experience. And maybe you don't blow up this planet. Maybe you change significantly the march of man. Or maybe you don't. Well, that's just part of God's experience, isn't it? So maybe nothing happens. Maybe nothing's going to happen, so shall we go back to sleep? Not Dorma. She said, I've done this far, sir. We're going to finish this one, sir. And then everybody can do whatever they want to do, Institute included. But we are going to succeed, sir. And I just need to know the way. So it's been a really interesting experience for everybody to watch. EJ and Charles don't like to leave Rick and Dorma alone too long because they're way out there somewhere. We will get it done. Will we, quote, save your world? No. The world will save itself. Or it will make way for Apollo to come in. And if it's outside of your perception, what difference does it make? You're going to have to change your perception and get into that perception, or it's not going to matter anyway. You don't have to go to the Himalayas to find the immortals. You are immortal. You are immortal. There's not one in this place that is not immortal. So all you have to decide is what you're going to do with that sensing body of yours. And until you grow high enough in knowing in that light form called soul, You're not going to know how to manage that body because they've dumbed you down so much that you don't even know what your spleen does. And the doctors say, ooh, a ruptured spleen. We'll just pull it out of there. And you've just pulled out your basic source of life, your blood cell development system. God didn't put any superfluous things in you. There are things in you that you can survive without. But it's why you will only survive until 75 years old or something. Because you have chosen to pick a time when you can get off this place. And part of the dying process, as you face that transition, part of it with a lot of you is just pure jealousy that you don't even perceive what it is when someone gets over there before you and you are still left. Not this is why you get angry with the departed. Not only am I now alone, let us say it's a spouse or parent who has been very, very close. Not only have they been solving some of your physical life problems and keeping you in some kind of emotional stability, always there to lean on when the going gets rough, hand you a Kleenex to wipe your nose, or a cookie to soothe your feelings. But the loss is great. The void left is great. Your mind can say, oh, it's better because they were so sick and they were racked with pain. And I can adjust now. Wouldn't it be nice if we let people go without making them be racked with pain so you can live with their passage? Can you not ever allow ones to transcend in beauty and sweetness and celebration